Hey, welcome to the 1505 Club. Today I'm going to be talking with you about boundaries. Whether you're a doctor, a student, or even a patient listening to this, the topic of boundaries is one that has the potential to change your life. This is an issue that I struggled with in my early years, but I didn't even know that I was struggling with it until I got better at it. So let's take some time to talk about boundaries. For more than 20 years, I practiced in the same town where I grew up. That meant that I had patients I had grown up with, and I had patients that had known me since the day I was born. There's nothing wrong with that scenario, but it did make it difficult at times to know where to place boundaries. Honestly, it wasn't something that I had ever really thought about, so I didn't know that it had become such a problem. But through listening to John Maxwell, I was introduced to the work of Dr. Henry Cloud. Dr. Cloud has a PhD in clinical psychology and has authored a number of books. The first book that I read by him is called The One Life Solution. The book got me thinking about boundaries in a way that I had never thought about them before. Most of the tips I'm going to share with you today come from a different book by Dr. Cloud entitled Boundaries for Leaders. Let's begin with the foundational boundaries conversation of why boundaries are important. Imagine your life as a castle. Everything you have, everything you are, and everything you value is held inside that castle. Does your castle have walls? I certainly hope so. In fact, if it's a good castle, then it probably even has a moat. Now here's the thing that's important. The obstacles that exist as boundaries are passive barriers that exist for defensive purposes only. For example, a gun is not a boundary because it is offensive, meaning it violates other people's boundaries. A good boundary is passive in the sense that it protects you and keeps people away from you while at the same time respecting the other person's boundaries and showing no aggression. It's important to note that words can violate boundaries, and when people use their words carelessly or offensively, then they're perceived as someone who violates boundaries rather than respecting them. I'm sure you've heard the silly notion that words are violence. Well, that isn't true. However, it is true that people who use their words to violate boundaries are perceived to be very similar to people who use violence to violate boundaries. This explains why some people are easily confused and unable to see the difference between words that violate boundaries and violence that violates boundaries. My house has a front door. My front door does not ever lash out at anyone who's walking by on the sidewalk. It just stands there, passively, to prevent anyone from entering. My Doberman Pinscher, on the other hand, is inside the house. We don't just let her roam the neighborhood to run off anybody who would be a trespasser. However, if you decide to push your way past the first boundary, the front door, the passive boundary, you'll quickly be met by the second, much more aggressive boundary. This is the proper method for setting up boundaries in our lives. Our first boundary is the most passive and benign, but it makes the boundary clear. As Dr. Cloud points out, a respectable person will respect the obvious boundary. When a person shows no respect for the outermost boundary, like someone pushing past your closed front door, you should immediately know that this person will not respect any of your boundaries. To be clear, a person who does not respect other people's boundaries is a person of the lowest moral character. Expect them to act like it. So let's talk for a second about the people who don't respect boundaries. There are only two types. The most common type is the people who have no boundaries in their own life. They often fail to respect the boundaries of others, and I've seen this in people I know well, that if respect for boundaries and creating your own boundaries were not modeled for them, then they're simply unaware that boundaries exist or that they should even be looking for them. It's like a person constantly stepping on other people's toes because they're simply unaware that other people have feet. This person is dangerous, not because they're malicious or evil, but because they're careless and clueless. While these are not bad people, make no mistake that they can hurt you just the same. Boundaries are very effective, perhaps most effective, for these types of people because they don't always know who they are. But when they hit your boundary, they simply change direction and keep on moving, clumsy and unaware. But your boundary must be strong enough to deter them, or else they'll just plow right through, unaware that they've done anything wrong. The second type of person who does not respect boundaries is the really dangerous one. These are the people who have really high personal boundaries and ignore other people's boundaries because they intend to prey on them. Without fully profiling a serial killer, I have to tell you that this was Ted Bundy in a nutshell. He had extremely high personal boundaries, but he preyed on people with low personal boundaries because he knew they were the easiest to take advantage of. Jeffrey Dahmer was the same story. I point that out because when I say these people are evil and dangerous, I'm not trying to be dramatic. They may not all be serial killers, but they almost always have their own pattern for finding vulnerable people and abusing them. When your boundaries are clear and a person refuses to honor them, but instead keeps testing them and pushing against them, then you need to determine, is this person just clueless or are they evil? I know that seems like a harsh judgment to make, but that's the very reason why it's so important to make it. They have to be one of the two because normal people don't just go walking through strangers' front doors like they aren't there. Let me tell you about the worst patient I ever had in this regard. It's probably good that I can't remember his name because he certainly deserved to be famous for his behavior. Anyhow, I don't actually remember how it started, but back then I gave my cell number to all my patients. Let me take a detour for just a second to talk about that for a moment. For 15 years, I gave my cell number to all of my patients as my mentors trained me to do, and not one single patient ever abused it. Then, in the following 5 years, I had no less than 6 patients horribly abuse it, and a few others minorly abuse it. The consequence being that I ultimately changed my cell number and I don't give it to any patients anymore. See? Boundaries. Anyway, it started with this horrible patient texting me on a Saturday and said he had an emergency. I decided to be nice and go see him, but he was not having an emergency. He let me know that since he was paying me, he expected me to be at his beck and call whenever he might need. I let him know that he had not paid me as a retainer for any services like that, and more importantly, I would never do it anyway because the weekends are mine. If that was a problem for him, then I'd recommend that he go somewhere else. The next weekend, he does it again. This time I go see him, not to adjust him, but to tell him that I'm firing him as a patient. I will not see him anymore, and he needs to find someone else. He then goes with the guilt trip and says, "But you're the only one who's done anything to help me." And I said, "Then you should have thought of that before you decided to disrespect me and abuse me." Fortunately, that was the end of it, and I never heard from him again. Being a small town, I'm pretty sure that he moved away. I heard later from some other people that he had made enemies everywhere at breakneck speed and no longer found the place livable for obvious reasons. I tell you that story because it followed a predictable pattern, but it was only predictable because I had enough insight from previous experiences to see it coming early and to nip it in the bud quickly. The thing is, you never know when you're going to encounter someone who tries to break past your boundaries. That's why, like your front door, they need to be firmly in place before anyone has a chance to come along. Dr. Cloud has another important insight that is so simple it should be obvious, but I think many of us fail to think about it concretely. His point is that most of us will say yes to anything we can, and we will only say no if we have a good reason. That means yes is our default position. However, the word no is the one that sets a boundary, and it gives you power. Yes is the word that removes boundaries and gives away your power. For that reason, shouldn't no be your default position instead of yes? So when you have someone who's trying to push past your boundaries, to understand their motives, you simply have to look at their use of the word no. A person who pushes past your boundaries but never uses the word no themselves creates an environment that dictates their lack of boundaries should be reciprocated by you having a lack of boundaries. Because they never say no to you, you should never say no to them. This is the person who's clueless and has no idea that their lack of boundaries is dangerous, both to themselves and others. In contrast, the person who preys on your avoidance of the word no will simultaneously use the word no to maintain their own boundaries, identifying themselves as the most dangerous person you can know because they're an opportunistic predator. In short, when you recognize that someone is not respecting your boundaries, you simply have to observe their use of the word no to then know if they are naive or diabolical. It doesn't make a difference in recognizing there's a problem, but it does make a difference in how you're going to deal with it. This foundational concept of boundaries is applicable to all relationships that we have. However, we need to have a concept of boundaries that applies to how we do work and how we create what we want and not just avoiding what we don't want. In that regard, the most effective businesses are the ones that work with teams, either teams within the office or partnering with other businesses and individuals to work as teams. I just started on a new project that I'll tell you more about later, but on this project, we work as teams. The first step of these teams is to take an assessment so we understand how each person works best. Once we know where we are best, then each person can function in their strength while allowing others to function in their strength. This is only possible if we respect boundaries rather than erecting them. Sure, I want people to respect my strength zone, but I don't get there by staunchly defending my territory. I get there by respecting other people's boundaries, and they will then respect mine. The people who are most likely to disrespect boundaries in this situation are the people who disillusionally think that they are good at everything, possibly even the best at everything. It's not uncommon to find these people on top, because if you honestly believe you're the best at everything, then where else would you expect to be? Ironically, the best leaders actively limit their involvement in everything, rather than looking for opportunities to get involved. This is counterintuitive, because we think of leaders as being involved and out in front, but the best leaders get good people, train them, and then set them loose to do their best work. There are two statements that John Maxwell makes almost every time he speaks. The first is that leadership is influence, nothing more and nothing less. And the other is that everything rises and falls on leadership. In other words, the success of any organization is based on the leadership ability of the ones on top. The catch is that a lot of people think that leadership means taking charge and holding people accountable. Rarely do they ask themselves, accountable to what? Your preferences? Or even worse, your whims? Boundaries make accountability easy because everybody knows what their place is, and more importantly, what it is not. Have you ever had a leader that took responsibility for something, only to have it go poorly, and then they say it was your responsibility, and you just didn't understand? This kind of deceptive sleight of hand is only possible when boundaries are poorly defined. In fact, poor leaders will often intentionally fail to recognize boundaries because this sets the stage for them to shift blame when they perform poorly. The other kind of poor leader that I have encountered is the one who always tells everyone how great things are when everyone knows they're not great. This is leadership gaslighting because it's meant to make you think that if you see a problem, then you're the only one and you must be the real problem. This works really well for poor leaders because it tends to run off the people who are most likely to point out that the leader is a failure. When I look at organizations, I always look to see if people are joining or are they leaving. Every organization has turnover, so then I ask, are you losing your best people or are you losing your worst people? You've heard the saying, the cream always rises to the top. Unfortunately, that's not always true. In the sewer, it's the scum that rises to the top. Too many organizations become like sewers, and the more the scum rises to the top, the more they become like sewers. Once again, it's boundaries that prevent this and safeguard against its creation. But people who don't have boundaries in their personal life rarely have them in their work life. Boundaries allow us to limit our work life to only doing the things we're good at. The problem is that when you are a one-doctor office with little to no staff, you don't have this luxury, and you're forced to do things that you probably aren't good at. If that's your scenario, then your best bet is to recruit people who will help you without being employees. Even if you're being helped by friends and family who are not your employees, it's still necessary to have boundaries and to stick to the areas that are only yours. People who don't respect boundaries will find this impossible to do. Another area where I think boundaries are essential is when it comes to how we assume responsibility for our patients. Yes, we're assuming some responsibility by getting involved and attempting to make changes in their current state of health. At the same time, we are not absolving the patient of all of their responsibility. We're getting in the boat with them. We're not taking the boat and letting them stand on the shore. In spite of our best efforts, we don't choose our patient's diet, exercise or lack of exercise, their sleeping habits, or their daily routine. We cannot take complete responsibility when there's still so much that's out of our control. And the patient cannot take no responsibility when there's so much that's still in their control. Instead, We need to have boundaries that define our role and continue to define the patient's role. Otherwise, you'll have patients who believe you should be completely responsible for how they feel, and they're merely the passenger or the victim of how they feel. Nobody is a victim in their own life, and at any given moment, we have the power to change it. So regardless of where the person is at this moment, we need to show them the changes that they can make today that will start them down a different path. The past may be written in stone, but the future is not. The only way the future looks like the past is if we make the same decisions in the future that we've made in the past. We need boundaries that keep the patient's responsibility as their responsibility, but we also need to show them the way. Another common one that I've answered a lot of questions about recently for some newer docs is the guilt they feel when a patient chooses a path other than chiropractic, and the doctor feels guilty that it's their fault the patient isn't making the best decision. For example, you have a patient that you know has an identifiable problem that you could certainly help with them with. They then go to their medical doctor, and they scare them that if they don't get surgery immediately, then they could suffer permanent injury from neglecting medical care. So the patient decides to get surgery because they're afraid of what will happen if they don't. Some young doctors in this situation feel tremendous guilt over this patient, that maybe they didn't present the chiropractic option as well as they should have. Or if the patient gets the surgery and it doesn't go well, will they be blamed because they didn't do more to inform the patient? That has to be a hard and fast boundary. It's your job to present information that is accurate and honest in the best way you know how, but it is not your responsibility to make decisions for the patient or to bear responsibility for the decisions that they do make. That's the definition of autonomy, and it's their freedom to do what they want. But the responsibility for those decisions also lies on them alone. Perhaps the most important area that involves boundaries is sales. Now, maybe you don't like the word sales, but as I once heard someone say, if you've ever tried to convince someone to see things from your point of view, then you're in sales. The blunt truth is that we are all in sales, whether we want to be or not. Whether we do that ethically and honestly is another story. And whether or not we do that with respect for other people's boundaries is also another story. One thing that we can all relate to is that we've had other people try to sell us. Some have been successful, and some have not. Some have made you want to buy from them, and some have made you want to never buy from them. From this perspective, there are two types of people: those who respect other people's boundaries, and those who do not. The ones who don't respect boundaries are often referred to as the hard sell. Let me tell you the story of a guy who also deserves to be famous, even though I can't remember his name, nor do I want to. One time, my wife and I were shopping mortgages to buy a new house. As you know, if you've ever done this, your information will be sold and you will get more calls than you can handle, and most of them are a waste of your time. Well, this guy calls me up. That's the most important part of the story, because I didn't call him. He called me. He gives me this spiel, and his loan is terrible, to be honest. He wants me to pay more money on the front end to get a lower interest rate on the back end, and wants me to lock in the deal by giving him money right there on the phone. I told him I wasn't really interested, but I would think about it, and that was true. He proceeds to call me a liar, says I'm just making up excuses. He says in essence that I need to prove I'm a man and just do it. I then reminded him that he called me, and that I'd already given him more than he deserved by listening to him this long. I then informed him that even if he had the best loan officer, and he was the best loan officer, I still wouldn't do it, just because I would never buy anything from him. I recommended he take a class on sales and human decency, and I hung up. That was a guy who had no respect for boundaries. In Todd Duncan's book, High Trust Selling, he counters this approach by saying that your job is to understand where the client is coming from and do your best to help them. With a little bit of research, I was able to quickly confirm my suspicion that the hard selling approach is associated with a strong desire for instant gratification and the inability to choose delayed gratification. According to the experts, it's a developmental problem, most often seen in the children of disengaged and unresponsive parents who develop an inability to delay gratification. Another thing I didn't expect to find is that people who forego delayed gratification in favor of instant gratification are generally people with lower intelligence. Be that as it may, the hard selling approach is one that focuses only on the sale in front of me rather than the future sales, yes, plural, that can come from building relationships. Relationships are built on trust, and trust is created by respecting other people's boundaries, among other things. Our first concept of boundaries are taught to us by our parents, not usually on purpose, but simply by observing their interactions with others. From there, we have the ability to adapt our approach and choose to respect boundaries more or less, but only if we can perceive the value in doing so. I say all these things, and I'm talking about this subject, because I don't want you to undervalue the benefit and, in fact, the necessity of creating boundaries to protect yourself and respecting other people's boundaries to make your life easier and have less friction. This topic of boundaries was something I didn't know I needed until I found it and didn't know how I lived without it. The one area we have not yet discussed is how we create boundaries from ourselves, our natural impulses that do not serve us well. In this regard, Dr. Cloud tells us it's all about three things: attending, inhibiting, and remembering. Perhaps you've read or heard about the research on multitasking. While many hold it up as the holy grail of productivity and even cite their multitasking ability as proof of their superior intelligence, the research actually says something quite different. It turns out that it's impossible to multitask, as our brains are hardwired to only be able to focus on one thing at a time. So what we're actually doing is rapidly cycling between one task and another, which it turns out requires a great deal of energy. So the longer we multitask, the more energy we burn, and the more inefficient we become. But what of those who brag about how good they are at multitasking? Well, it turns out that the research shows that these people are generally mediocre, at best, at the tasks that they are trying to multitask. The fact that they are working so hard and burning so much energy multitasking these tasks gives them the false impression that they're much better at these tasks than they actually are, because they're working hard, so they must be good. The antidote for creating the mediocrity of multitasking is to create focus intentionally, and we do that by attending, inhibiting, and remembering. So let's talk about what that means and how we can apply it. Attending refers to the fact that we need to attend to what is relevant. I think we all know that, but it doesn't change the fact that many people spend way too much time attending to things that are not relevant. The problem here is poor judgment, because we do this because something is obviously relevant to us. The problem is that it's not actually relevant to achieving better outcomes. This happens when we try to change or improve our technique only to focus on something irrelevant and ignore something relevant. So the problem is a problem of judgment to see and understand what is truly relevant. Its corollary is that we might inhibit the things that are not relevant. This step is harder because it requires judgment and honesty to recognize something is irrelevant, but it also requires discipline to resist the urge to do it anyway. Doing things we know we shouldn't do, but do them anyway because it makes us feel good, is a major hindrance to progress, mostly because of all the time it wastes. We also have to inhibit things that are destructive towards our ultimate goal. Finally, remembering refers to being conscious of what we need to know. Sometimes the most important elements have to be intentionally remembered, because remembering them doesn't come naturally. We make this process more natural by structuring our thinking to include intentional remembering. The important thing about boundaries in business is that their ultimate end is to create freedom and creativity, not control. Businesses that seek to create control from the top down are often able to succeed in the short term, sometimes spectacularly, but they also tend to burn out and self-destruct sooner rather than later. Sometimes spectacularly. Top-down control is not a recipe for long-term success, but it can fill the ego and lead people to believe that they're much better than they actually are. To finalize this point, I'll simply mention that in top-down control environments, there's a lot of talk about consequences. But in a good leadership environment with productive boundaries, there are also positive consequences, and not just negative consequences. When negative consequences are easy to attain and positive consequences are difficult or impossible to attain, then the result will be highly demotivational. As a final appeal to boundaries, one of the most important reasons for having boundaries is that it helps to prevent burnout. I don't think that burnout should have the bad rap that it often does. Burnout isn't usually caused by anything that you've done wrong, but it's typically the result of many things that are outside your control, converging simultaneously to require more from you than you have to deliver. Sure, that can happen easily if you're a weak person, but it can also happen to anyone if the outside forces become great enough. Boundaries help to prevent this, not by building a wall and keeping everyone out, but by being able to control our exposure and limit the effect that outside forces have on our production. Burnout is also the result of meeting high expectations for a very long time. A professional athlete may have to be at the top of their game, as close to perfect as they can be, but usually only for a few years. We, as doctors, are expected to be there as soon as we graduate and to stay there till the day we quit. That's tremendous pressure, and the general public has no idea how hard it is to do what we do at the level we're expected to do it. I think that our conversation around burnout should not be if, but when. This conversation isn't about getting good at what we do, but it's about how do we do it sustainably so we don't run ourselves into the ground. We fight against burnout, but it tends to be that the longer we go before experiencing burnout, the harder it hits us when it does. I've talked with many experienced Gonstead doctors, and I think you might be surprised at how many have experienced burnout or are even experiencing it now. I'm not shy about admitting that I experienced burnout about 10 years into practice. Chiropractic was only about half the reason why I was burned out, and that's the point I'm trying to make. You can have your office figured out, and you're running full throttle right to the limit. All it takes is something big, devastating, and/or unexpected, and it throws you over the edge and into burnout. I give you this as a warning if you're a younger doctor, and as a consolation if you're an older doctor, or you feel yourself on the edge of burnout now. It isn't you. It's circumstances. We can't always control them, and sometimes they become too much. When you're burned out, you really have no choice but to take a break. Maybe it's for a week, or a month, or like me, it might be a year. Burnout is caused by physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion. Rest is the antidote. However, you might need to make some changes to prevent future burnout, so take some time to figure out what exhausts you. If you can find the source of your exhaustion, then you know what you need to change. It might be something small, or it might be something huge. In either case, make the change. Find what gives you energy and what drains your energy. Move away from the drain and move into what feeds you. That's the only true antidote for exhaustion. Well, I hope you found this episode helpful. I know we're not talking about deep chiropractic ideas today, but we're talking about an idea that can protect you and keep you going for many years. Boundaries are a very important concept that we all need to think about if we want to keep going for the long term. Normally, we would take a break until the end of the year, but it's my intention to produce a few more episodes before the end of the year. Nonetheless, we're working on things for next year and looking to make some positive changes for the new year coming up. We have some really exciting things that we're working on right now, and I can't wait to tell you about what we'll be doing in this next year. Until then, I hope you have the very best week and holiday season possible, and I'll see you again next time.